Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm! Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comment. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. Greetings and salutations, everyone. It is good to be with you once again. And we have a lot to cover today. We're going to be talking about primarily the debate, right? We're going to talk about what's going on next week and the fact that we're only about 5 or so weeks away from the 2012 presidential elections. We're also going to take a look at Michigan and what's going on with their education system. And I want to talk a little bit about early voting. I want to kind of emphasize the importance of early voting and getting out there, special able-bodied peoples, because we want to make sure that if we get our vote in, we can go out there and be available to go out and help others on election day. So those are the kind of things that we're going to talk about today. So first up, let's get started. I want to talk about the debate between President Barack Obama and the Republican challenger Mitt Romney. And the fact that it's going to be coming up next week on Wednesday, October the 3rd. That's right, Wednesday, October the 3rd. And it was marked the first time that the two candidates will be able to challenge each other directly. Over the past several months, you've seen Mitt Romney go head-to-head in his primaries. And if you've seen some of the debates, Freudian slip. But if you've seen some of the debates, you've noticed his debate style. You notice how he can get caught up in certain topics. You've seen him, you know, challenge Rick Perry for $10,000. You've seen him go just strictly off of his course. So, but we will get a chance for the first time to see President Obama and Mitt Romney go head to head. You know, none of this by proxy stuff. No, nobody's on the stump for them. No Paul Ryan running interference. No Bill Clinton delivering a remarkable speech. We will get a chance to see these two people head to head. And I want to get your take on what you think the outcome. More importantly, what you think the significance of this debate is, primarily for Mitt Romney, but also for President Obama. Now, we should be able to determine how each candidate fares by keeping an eye on a couple of factors, right? And I want to talk about a few of those. first, I want to talk about what Reuters put out, this five things to watch for. And Romney on the offense and Obama on the defense is one of the things we're going to take a look at. The fact that Romney is going to be, try to be going hard at President Obama, trying to go in, you know, going to be able to challenge him on his record and to, you know, stay hard to the right on issues that we know that doesn't resonate with the American people in a majority sense, but he's going to be catering to his base. So we're going to be watching that, and he knows he's going to have a national audience. And so with having a national audience, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how he moves in a direction to try to move to the center. Now, of course, over the last several weeks, he's made a lot of gaffes, right? I mean, and so this is his opportunity to see if he could actually make some headway with the voters. He's been losing in the poll. You know, every day something would come up where he would essentially just, you know, take a dip in the poll. So this is an opportunity for Mitt Romney to really make – this is basically his last chance. In other words, this is his last chance. And I want to take your calls. I want to get your comment on these things. But in just a few minutes, and we're going to open up the phone line so you can do that. But in the meantime, and before we do that, joining me live in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events and the chief operating officer for TaylorMade Training and Consulting. I introduce to some and present to others, no other than Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, now that you got that rousing round of applause, you got a lot of fans out there, I see. Which is a good thing. I still see you hot on Twitter, talking to Iyanna Van Zant, and Reverend Al tweets to you every other day. So I'm always glad to have someone of celebrity on the show, and I appreciate you joining the show.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about the debates coming up next week. Primarily, I want to take a look at these five areas that Reuters put out, and the fact that this is the first time that the two will be on stage together. This is the first time that we get a chance to see Mitt Romney in the context or a situation where he will be challenged by somebody that it matches his intellectual capacity and in some cases supersedes his intellectual capacity. One could argue when they were in the primaries, he was matched against people that are lesser intelligence. Looking at Newt Gingrich, he was facing Rick Perry and Michelle Bachmann, and even that particular type of contestants really is somebody that's really going against him at that point really didn't push him to his limit. You know, by all stretch of imagination, he was like a teenager going into a first grade classroom and trying to show that he was better than everybody else. Well, quite naturally, when you're faced with that type of opposition, then one can conclude that you're gonna look good under that condition. But with President Obama, he's definitely going to have somebody that's going to match his wit and his intellect. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't necessarily think Mitt Romney is going to be a match to President Obama's intellect, personally. I think President runs circles around Mitt Romney on any given day. But I get your point in terms of in Mitt Romney's primary, he wasn't challenged probably as much as he will be come Wednesday when he goes up against the president. I definitely agree with that. And for some are scared by this possibility. They're playing all sorts of mind games with the public. They're trying to downplay it like, oh, it's either not going to be that good or it's a game changer for Mitt Romney. He has so much to prove. And then you have the president's people, you know, saying he hasn't had a whole lot of time to prepare because he has another job to do. So it's kind of funny, all of the different little games they're trying to play on our psyche as we get ready for this first debate. But I am in total agreement with you that it will be the first time that Mitt Romney has to do more than talk in sound bites and talk to a broader base of people, because during the primaries, his goal was to be right of everybody on stage, and obviously he was highly successful of that, which is why he ended up being the nominee. So I wonder how he pivots to the center because of the audience that will be watching, will be the entire United States of America and not just a small segment of it that he catered to during the primary. But then again, it's that 47% that he doesn't really care about anyway. So he may not pivot to the middle at all. He just may very well stay to the extreme and be perfectly okay with that.
Now, obviously that could be a danger if he tries to move to the center, because he's been so extreme to the right over the last several weeks, months, and effectively years, because he's trying to win this Republican nomination. Now, if he try to move to the center and try to come out put out facts that are that without any kind of evidence, then it'll be interesting to me to see his body language, right? So the TV is a really good medium for debates, because we can actually get a chance to see how they react to certain questions and see whether or not that, you know, the eyes rolling or the faces frown and things of that nature. And after an extended period of time, you know, you can probably get by with it the first couple of minutes or so. But after 30, 40, 50 minutes, the real person comes out. The body language starts to really tell the audience a lot about the candidate. Now, so my question is to you, at what point do you think Mitt Romney will realize that he's no longer in the minor leagues? He's gonna know he's in the major leagues. So, you know, because he's been doing a lot of things over the past few weeks that's been in the minor leagues, and now he's going to be on a real stage with the president and all the people tuning in to watch this debate. At what point do you think he's going to realize he's in the major league? And secondly, will his body language give us that evidence that he realized that?
Okay. So, your first question. I don't think he will realize he's in the major league, because if he hasn't realized it by now, definitely since the convention that he was in the major leagues, I don't know that he will. When asked questions about his campaign and things that are happening, his response is, we're going in the right direction. That wasn't the campaign. That was me. Well, you are the campaign. So how do you separate the campaign from what you do and you from the campaign? I didn't understand that. So because of those sorts of things that he has done over, as you stated, the last couple of weeks and really the last month, like I stated, going back to the convention up until now, if he doesn't realize it before Wednesday, like tonight is when he needs to realize that he just got picked up by the majors and he's going to have to, like, change his uniform to something different. I mean, if he doesn't pick that up now to get ready for Wednesday, then I don't know that he will. I really don't. And I'm not being
minor league mistakes, though. He keeps making minor leagues, gaffes. He keeps putting on minor league type of functions and activities. So, I mean, I hear you say that he should realize he's in the major leagues, but his actions are more minor league activities.
And that might be all he is. He just might be a minor league player. He might do, I mean, you know, you have some people been in management and supervisory. You know, you have some people on your team that are just really good workers. And a lot of times we make mistakes to think, oh, that person would be a great leader because they know how to get the job done, right? They know how to work. But every great worker doesn't translate into being a great leader.
Awesome point.
So just because I'm really good in this lane and I know how to follow directions doesn't mean I know how to give directions. Doesn't mean I know how to think strategically. Doesn't mean I know how to plan for the next 5 years. I might be good at following through on your plan and your ideas and making you look great and really putting all this effort into it. But to put me in that spot, I'm not going to shine as well. Think of Michael Jordan to baseball. Because he was a great basketball player, didn't stand over to him being a great baseball player.
Right.
So it's the same kind of mindset. I think Mitt Romney might just be a great minor league player, or he just might be a great executive. He just won't be a great president. He's just not a good politician.
And people need to be able to separate the two, right? You can't infer one because of the other, right? You can't say that because I was a great worker that I'll automatically be a great leader. You can't say that because I was good at basketball or great at basketball that I'd be great at baseball. You can't say that I'll be great in business and be a great president. And so why is the people then all caught up in this, he's a great businessman? Well, I mean, and we know we can't run the country like a business, because if we would, we would run it in the ground. I mean, it runs more like an organization, not-for-profit organization specifically, as opposed to a business where you're trying to create profit. So why is the American people so caught up and then trying to elect a businessman when we have numerous examples in the school system, in the lead of our nonprofit organizations, that when a businessman get in, and in the case, and doesn't have the experience coming up through the rank of the nonprofit structure or the structure to serve or the heart to serve, then they make all of these mistakes. Does that translate into what Mitt Romney could potentially be going into?
It kind of does. I mean, you got to remember, George Bush was a businessman. He wasn't a great one.
Ah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He ran a few things and bankrupted.
In the ground. He ran a few things in the ground. Go and say it.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Like the baseball team, for example.
Right. So, you know, obviously one, and then if I hope that wasn't the reason why he got elected the first time, which he really didn't get elected the first time, but whatever, you know, semantics. So I think that the where Mitt Romney is going to run into trouble, or where he has ran into trouble, is that he's like the mannequin that's dressed to the nine in the window, but you cannot have a conversation with the mannequin and respect and expect anything to come back to you, because mannequins don't talk. They
mm-hmm.
don't think.
Mm-hmm.
They just look good
mm-hmm.
based on what they have on.
Right.
So Mitt Romney has been able to get away with looking the part, because he's white, he's male, he's affluent, he's ran some businesses, and he was a governor. Although you never really hear him talk about his governorship for the state of Massachusetts, but that's his resume. Now, if we were to really do a good look at his resume and really begin to call and check some references, you could call Massachusetts right now and speak with the current governor, and he'll tell you what he walked into behind Mitt Romney. That'd tell you right there how he runs government. You can look at the records of Bain Capital, see what they did, how the business was structured, tell you what type of businessman he is, what his mentality is, bottom line, profit first, people fifth.
Right? Not even second, huh?
Not even second. No, they fifth.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so based on that, just looking at those two areas, just based on that, that should tell you he's really not the man for the job. See, there's some things you really can't do on the job training for. Some things you need to come in already having. What the president lacked 4 years ago in terms of what some thought was leadership, he had in heart, and he had in his care for people and his willingness to serve. See, Mitt Romney, in my opinion, doesn't have a heart for people because he puts profit over people. He doesn't have a heart to serve because he thinks people ought to be doing for their own self, regardless of their situation. So when you're talking about Mitt Romney, you really need to look at him in his totality, from what he brings to the table in terms of his experience and what he brings to the table in terms of his character. Because you want somebody that can sit in a room with a bunch of people that don't like you and still be able to hold your head up. Mitt Romney, in my opinion, wouldn't be able to do that and sit at the head of the table with foreign leaders and still represent the United States of America in a very positive light. I don't trust him to do that because of what he's already shown me. I'm not basing this on the fact that he's a Republican and I'm not. I'm basing that on the fact he's already shown me he doesn't know how to be in those settings.
Right.
So how many times, as Maya Angelou says, when people show you who they are, believe them the first time.
Believe them. That's right.
So he's shown us from the primaries, because he said back then that he didn't really care about poor people. Remember that interview on CNN? Now it comes out, he's saying again about the 47% that he doesn't really care about. Then he says, oh, there's a safety net, but then I'm gonna reduce the safety net. And then, so every and making bets with people, as you alluded to in your opening, you know, the elevators in the house, the for his numerous cars that needs elevators in them. And so when you start to think about, well, he's already shown me how he feels about me because I am the 47%. So I am the poor. I am the least of these. So why would I think when he got in office any of that would change? He's already told me.
You got a point. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Press 1 to talk and 2 to listen. We also have a chat room out there, and we can also tweet us. So you can tweet Jema at AskJema, that's AskJema, and we'll read your tweets live on the air. And you can also tweet me at TaylorMade101, that's TaylorMade101. So, Jema, I want to talk a little bit about the reason that so many people are emphasizing the first debate. And the reason why I ask that question is because over the last several months, we have really seen who Mitt Romney is, as you stated. We really have, and you're not alone in your assessment of him looking like a mannequin, right? Because the unique thing about a mannequin, other than the thing you said about not being able to talk back to you, was the fact that you can change a mannequin by putting on any different type of suit. A mannequin can look like a girl. A mannequin can look like a boy. A mannequin can look like a man. A mannequin can look like a basketball player, a football player. A mannequin can pretty much be changed to look any way that he wants. And so I feel like extending that analogy a little bit further about Mitt Romney's position on abortion, his position on immigration, his position on foreign affairs, his position on tax policy, Medicaid, Medicare, they continue to change just like that mannequin. So if the people have seen this, not just by my opinion, but by his displaying this over the matter of weeks, and people have saw how he runs a campaign by looking at what has happened on the convention, and people have seen him talk about the 40% like they're non-existent or doesn't matter, why is it then that so many people are emphasizing or placing so much on this first debate? I mean, to me, he's out of chances. The first debate means nothing to me. So how is it then he can get so many different chances and we know who he is? Jema, what is wrong with the American people to continue to give this guy, in particular, not saying the Republican Party, because I believe that there are great Republicans out there. I believe that in the old days that Republicans did have a platform or something to stand upon. We don't agree on all the issues, but I can really consider some of their talking points. But this particular guy has given me no reason, and so therefore I wonder why is there so much emphasis on the first debate. Jema, you say what?
Because they are waiting for the real Mitt Romney to please stand up. By that I mean, here's a man who for all practical purposes has been running for president for the last 6 years, right? At least 5-6 years he's been running for president. And in that time frame, we personally, I don't know anything more about Mitt Romney than I did 5 years ago, because he hasn't done anything to show me anything different except the fact that he has a lot of money and he hides it in places not in America. So here we are with someone who the right and the white, some of the white of the country, want to be the savior to reclaim their whiteness and their rightness back in their rightful place. You know, we would be disingenuous if we were to say that there's not a segment of the population in the United States of America who has been angry since November of 2008 when President Obama was elected, who have been angry since January 2009 when he was sworn in. We have people that we pay, because our tax dollars pay the salaries of elected officials who sat in a room and said what they were not going to do, which means they have not done their job, and they've been receiving a full salary ever since then. That's a problem. So these people are waiting for and hoping that Mitt Romney on Wednesday steps up to the plate and hits the ball out the park. Although he hasn't done it yet, because if he was going to do it and change the minds of people, he should have done it during his convention, because that's what conventions do. Conventions give you a bounce. They're supposed to, throw you up into the front of the people, because now is the end of the summer and people begin to pay attention. And so if he didn't do it then, I'm not sure how they think he's going to do it one-on-one with the president, although some pundits say that he's better one-on-one. Although I didn't quite see that in the interview last week on 60 Minutes, I didn't see him any better there. So I'm not sure how he's going to be better sitting next to, or standing, or however the layout is, next to the man whose job he thinks he can do better. I don't know how he's going to do that, because I haven't seen Mitt Romney speak from the heart. I haven't seen Mitt Romney, let me change that, because when he talked about the 47%, I think he was speaking from the heart. Let me change that. I haven't seen him show the level of compassion that is needed during this time that we're in, such as now. And if he has failed to read his audience, and as I stated, he's going to be speaking to not just the base of his party. When you go on as the nominee and you're sitting next to the man whose job you want, you're going to have to speak to some people that you want to pull away from him. If he goes in talking the same rhetoric and spewing out the same stuff he's been saying for the last year and a half, it's not even going to be necessary to have two more debates. It's not even going to be necessary, because he's not going to say anything different.
Right. I have to agree with you on that. It's time for a quick break, but when we return, we're going to keep the conversation going and open up the phone line so we can hear from you. And to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my East Boone friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. In just a few minutes, we're going to open up the phone lines and hear from you. And I want you to call in to talk about the debates. What is your opinion about what's going to happen on Wednesday next week when Mitt Romney meets President Obama for the first time? To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, Jim, I want to talk a little bit about the debates, a little bit more about the debates. Now, we talked about Mitt Romney being in the major leagues versus the minor leagues. We gave the mannequin analogy. I want to know what's your opinion about President Obama challenging Mitt Romney with the Bush Doctrine. Do you think Mitt Romney will throw George Bush under the bus? You know, they didn't invite him to the convention. They have stayed far away from each other. But President Obama has a really good he makes a really good point when he ties in the Bush Doctrine to Mitt Romney, like he did when he tied in the Bush Doctrine with McCain. How do you think Mitt Romney will handle this connection when President Obama makes it, or if he makes it?
Well, I mean, the thing about it is that Mitt Romney will probably stumble on that question because he probably won't even know what that is, much like Sarah Palin didn't know what it was. But you look at the amount of people that he has surrounded himself with, and a lot of them have been former Bush people. So you want to not have the man around whose name preceded President Obama in the White House, but you want to have his people around that gave him the information and how he came up with his doctrine. So that doesn't quite make sense to me, and I don't think it's been enough making that connection. But you don't really even need to make the connection with Bush, because Mitt Romney on his own is just already talking about doing some crazy stuff. So if the president doesn't make the connection, or I'm sure he will kind of backdoor it kind of, because he's pretty good at backdooring stuff and zinging you, and you don't even know you even got zapped until it's already over with. And so I'm pretty sure that that's somewhere looming in the background, since I think this debate is going to be on domestic policy. And so it's going to be quite interesting to see how and what Governor Romney is going to talk about as it relates to taking care and getting the country continuing to move in the right direction. I think, and in my opinion, I'm not sure how his policies are going to keep us moving. Most independent economists are all stating that it would do the exact opposite and would put us back in the hole that we just got out of. So it's going to be interesting how he tries to come up with something that's gonna stick. I mean, it's gonna be difficult. It's gonna be difficult.
You know, I really like this show, The Newsroom, primarily because they have done a really good job of challenging the media to go after the second, third, and fourth question. You and I talked a couple of days ago about Russert and how he had a really good impact on the Sunday show, and right, and how we don't see a lot of the media do that. And so when you see one like when you see a program like The Newsroom begin to start the conversation, you really get excited about it, because we know in a lot of cases life imitate art. And so what I gather from The Newsroom is the fact that they were asking the second and third question, and then now reporters are starting to do more fact checking, right? They don't just allow the politician to get on stage and say what they want to say and then get away with it. They'll go out and they'll do fact checking, and then they'll come back and report on it. You know, and it's not just a matter of them going out saying, well, factcheck.org said A, B, and C, and so they're going to run with it. They actually do their own set of fact-checking. I said all that to say this. When we get to the debates, Mitt Romney can no longer sit on stage and lie. He could, but it could have a real damaging impact, because President Obama could be able to put him on the spot right there to challenge his facts. You know, as we see, and then you have a moderator out there that pretty much can primarily back him up. And so he can look on stage as a liar and a person that's really untrustworthy. Now, he can kind of spin it on his TV shows and other people on a stump phone, but he will be able to do it for himself right on stage. And he would be held accountable for what he says on stage. So how do you think this is going to have an impact on Mitt Romney as he gets to debate President Obama, when we know you're going to have all of these people fact-checking him on stage?
Well, let's be clear that Mitt Romney and his party have already stated they're not really into facts. And I believe you even had Paul Ryan today say he doesn't have time to explain their tax plan.
Right.
I mean, that's just... I can't even really put it into words, because how do you not have time to explain your tax plan? Okay, so the challenge is going to be, because, you know, we got to call the elephant in the room the elephant in the room, and by that I mean you're looking at the president, who has to be careful not to come off as Mr. Know-it-all, right? Because you don't want to alienate those white males who already got an issue with this black man telling them what to do.
One of the smart elites, right. Mm-hmm.
Right, being in the highest office in the land, the most coveted office in the world, really. So he has to really be careful how he manages that. You know, people keep bringing up the moment he and Hillary had the exchange, and she was talking about how he was likable and everybody liked him, and he said, oh, you're likable enough, Hillary, and most people thought that was condescending. I didn't take it that way, but whatever. Some thought, you know, a lot of women thought that he was being condescending towards Hillary. So he has to manage those little nuances in how he responds, and so he'll have to check Mitt Romney on his lies, because that's what they're going to be. That's what they are. They're going to be lies. They're not going to be true statements, and they're going to be fairy tale stuff. It's going to be made up stuff in his world. So he'll have to check him on that. We hope the moderator supports him, but I'm not real sure about that. I'm not confident, really, in the moderators to do anything more than try to keep their ratings up for the night. So, it's going to be interesting how they support or not support the president when the president does challenge Mitt Romney on some of his untruths. So the president's job is a lot harder than Mitt Romney's, because Mitt Romney, no one has any expectations of him. If he can just walk on stage and stand there and not fall
right.
down, you know what I'm saying? He's done well. if he can put two sentences together and have the noun and the verb in agreement, you know, that's going to be a victory. So the president's job is much harder because he has to manage all of those things that are hanging out there that we're not even thinking about. But some of the things I mentioned, he has to handle the tone. He has to handle, how he responds and the inflection of his voice, his posture. He has to handle and manage all of that. Well, I don't even think Mitt Romney is considering any of that because he doesn't care, and no one is, and it wouldn't be wrong for him to do anything that's going to be wrong for the president to do. I think it was a part last debate season when was it McCain that wouldn't look at the president during one of their debates?
Yeah, And that funny little face he made behind President Obama's back when he was walking away.
Yeah. So McCain, you know, kind of took some heat for that. I don't know if Mitt Romney would take the same heat. I really don't. I can't tell you why. I don't know.
Right, because they expect him to do that, be that way anyway.
Right. Because he's already that way. He's already a person who comes off as being above everybody else and my lifestyle affords me to do all what I've already done. So I really don't even have to pay any attention to you. And I want to know, how he even refers to the president is going to be quite interesting.
Whether he called Mr. President Obama or Barack or Hussein.
Right, and see, those are things I'm looking for. Looking for the level of respect for the office.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm looking for, because if you can't respect the person sitting there, then you definitely don't need to be there.
Right. Absolutely.
So
you mentioned noun, verb, and agreement, and that's a nice little segue into something I want to talk about relative to the school system. In particular, Mission school system. Now, I'm not real sure if a lot of people know about this or not, and as you and I was discussing this last night, I was appalled at it, and I was really a loss for words. And I know that's probably an easy target for me to say that, but so I'll let you comment on that later. But I was really at a loss for words when I heard this. And I want to talk a little bit about this Mission policy that links
Michigan.
Yeah, Michigan policy that links school attendance to welfare benefits. Now, let me say this again for the listeners out there that probably didn't hear me, but I'm going to say it again. I want to talk a little bit about this Michigan policy. The state of Michigan, they have a policy that links school attendance to welfare benefits. Now, as a way of keeping youth off the streets and in the classroom, Michigan Governor Rick Snyder is requiring kids ages 6 to 15 to attend school regularly in order for their families to be eligible for welfare cash benefits. Now, sometimes over the internet, we've been doing the show for 2 years now, things come over the internet distorted and people may not hear me clearly. So I'm going to say it one more time. As a way to keep youth off the streets and in the classrooms, Michigan Governor Rick Snyder is requiring kids ages 6 to 15 to attend school regularly in order for their families to be eligible for welfare cash benefits. Now, the policy which takes effect tomorrow. This policy is not something they're going to vote on. They already done it. It's actually going to take effect tomorrow. That's right, October the 1st, 2012. Now, it would enable school districts to report students who are chronically absent to Michigan's Human Services Department. It also requires a new cash assistance application to prove enrollment when they request aid, and families who already receive assistance to show school attendance records during annual reviews. Now, just for context, here's how the state defines a truant student. They define a truant student as one who misses 10 or more days in one school year. And I quote, "It's a parent's responsibility to make sure their children are in school, first and foremost because they will have an impact on the rest of that child's life." Grand Rapids District Spokesman John Helmholtz told MLive.com this morning, "It's just unacceptable for children to be chronically absent. This new policy is one more tool in our toolbox to help children get the education they need." Jima, what do you think about this policy? Why is it that, you know, people talk about less government, but when it comes to the impoverished community, they're enacting a policy that states that if a child does not attend school regularly, they will not get their welfare cash benefits. What do you think about that?
Okay, I have two issues. The first issue is the implications, because you're talking about the implications of who's receiving the welfare benefits. And they're making the correlation between high dropout rates and or poor attendance in poor neighborhoods to people also receiving welfare benefits. So they're putting a color on it, and they're making that color be a brown color or a black color. So that's my first problem, because once again, they've strategically found a way to equate black and brown to poor and poverty, and I have a problem with that. That's number one. Number two, here is again a law, because that means the people who voted on this law, they voted on this law in the state of Michigan, or maybe they didn't because they didn't show up to the polls. I don't know, but it's a law now. And so to talk about it now, because it's going to go into effect, you should have been talking about it when it was first being on the ballot. So on the one hand, I have sympathy and empathy for the people who may be affected by it. But on the other hand, I'm not sure why you want to scream now when you should have been screaming when it was even being considered, number two. Number three, your kids should go to school. And it is your responsibility as a parent to make them go to school. And the definition of chronic, what does that mean? Is that unexcused absences? Because what if my child ends up with some serious, you know, illness? Are those 10 days counted? My child's in the hospital for a month for, you know, the flu or something, you know, some sort of West Nile virus or something. Does those 10 days count? So how do they decide chronic? Like I said, is it chronic as in terms of unexcused absences that nobody know why your child's not at school and you don't know that he's not at school? Or is it, you know, just not at school? So I don't know if the law specifies that. I don't know if that's drilled down or not. I haven't looked at it. So, you know, that would be a question I would have as to whether or not, you know, when they say chronic, and is it excused and unexcused, and how does that play out? But the big picture is, you know, for a party that talks about government and government being too large and government always being in people's business, every bill and every law that has been passed in most Republican states has been about government over-involved, whether it was in education, whether it was in birth control, whether it was in contraception, all of those, whether it's with abortion, all of those are placing government more involved in your life, not less than. So they confuse me on what it is they're looking for. So that just goes into everything else. I don't understand, you know, what's the goal here? Is the goal to save money because you don't want to pay out the benefits to people? So you want to find a way to do something else with that money because you know parents are not going to be that, in, you know, tuned in to what their child is doing. What is the ultimate goal? Or is the ultimate goal to ensure that kids are going to school? Now, here's the state of Michigan. Let's be clear who we're talking about here, who last year, at the beginning of school year, didn't even have any books for their kids. Their books was locked up in the warehouse somewhere, not even getting to the students. So it's kind of difficult to say they're that concerned about education when their school systems in their major cities is falling apart. So is this really about making sure kids going to school, or is this really about trying to not take care of the least of these once again?
Okay, I have three problems, and we're going to take them, you know, one by one, but I want to talk about what they are first. So to be able to really create the argument or present the argument that about, you know, taking away welfare benefits, you have to be able to directly correlate the attendance rate with the dropout rate, right? Mm-hmm. So that begs the question then, if the kids are going to school, why are they performing so poorly?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then the second thing I want to talk about is welfare benefits are when you receive them are not tied in no way, shape, or form to the school system. So why is it maintaining them is? And then finally, I want to know, what if you are not on welfare and your kids miss school? How are you addressing that particular population? Is it the case then, if I am in an affluent neighborhood and my child misses 10 days of school or more, what repercussions are in place for me? And so for the state of Michigan to kind of cycle out or just kind of spell out the poor or the people that are on welfare, and normally or typically when you talk about people on welfare, people directly correlate that to being poor. That may not be the case, but they may be in a certain situation. But nevertheless, if you're on welfare, why is it then that your rights are infringed upon than people that are not on welfare with respect to the school system? Mm-hmm. I just don't understand. So let's take the latter first. And what do you do then? How does the governor get in the way with the fact that the people that are not on welfare can do it rather than the people on welfare? Because it's policy now. It's not an option, because the people that are not on welfare is not an option.
That's the vague, for me, the vagueness of the law, because as I stated, I don't know if there's any breakdown in terms of chronic being related to illness, chronic just being out of school, chronic, I mean, you know, what does that mean, more than 10 absences? So that's one thing. And then you're right, because so for the parents who is affluent, and they keep skipping school as well, what's the backlash for them? Where is their responsibility is?
Because it's not legislated.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. And, you know, why is it just that, you know, poor people, kids need to be legislated? I don't understand that. If education is the issue and you want to ensure the kids are going to school, getting the education, then my second question is, you know, why is the record so bad in the state and in some of your urban areas in terms of what the kids are learning and in terms of the dropout rate, and do these two things correlate? But what did the study say? Or did somebody just have a brilliant idea one day? I mean, this is the same place, I think, that was going to arrest the parents for, you know, if they didn't make any of their kids school conferences or something along those lines. I mean, they were trying to make it, you know, an arrest issue if the parents didn't show up for a parent-teacher conference or call or do some kind of way to communicate. They were trying to make that be a criminal issue. They were going to arrest the parents. So I think this is the same state. If it's not them, it might be Illinois, but they're right there together. So what? I agree with you. What is that all about? You know, how is it that the poor, the most disenfranchised, have all these standards, and yet the people that have more than, they kind of get to get away with murder, literally?
Yeah, I mean, you know, going back to my question is the fact that, you know, one could argue that if you're trying to make a direct correlation for truancy and with respect to dropout rates, unless your school has a 0% dropout rate, then you should be under this law. I mean, if you're trying to make the correlation between poor parents and the fact that they're not attending school or attendance rates, then if it's about attendance rates, then it should be, if your attendance rates are not at zero, then you should be legislated. So the problem I have with this law is that they're strictly spelling out welfare. They're putting a stigma associated with welfare as opposed to addressing the problem. If the problem is truancy, let's address truancy for everybody. Address truancy for my kids because I'm on welfare. I mean, is it the case that my kids are the only ones that you can, quote unquote, concerned about? I doubt.
Right.
And so when you look at the law from that perspective, this is what concerns me. So let's talk now about the second one, welfare benefits. And so I'm assuming that when you go down to the office and you apply for welfare benefits, they don't ask you how many days your child was in school to qualify. They don't ask you what your children's grades were to qualify. There's a strict set of guidelines that qualifies or disqualifies an applicant for receiving benefits. So why is it then that all of a sudden downstream, after you get awarded your benefits, then you want to tie my benefits to something else? This is almost saying that if I don't, you know, if I refuse to go to four PTA meetings, then you're going to take away my benefits, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, once you open this door to tying, kids' behaviors to my benefits, then what are the limitations? Can you say if I don't make, as I suggested earlier, the parent-teacher conferences, the PTA meetings, the baseball games, the football games, you know, should I be doing, what if my child misses 4 days of homework? All of these things are factors when you're talking about the complete education system, because they all have an impact on the success or failure of your child. So if you begin to legislate the number of days that they can attend school, then what is prohibiting you from from adding other things that prevent me from getting my welfare benefits? What do you think about that, Gina?
And that's just it. Nothing is preventing it, because when we allow those sorts of people to get in office and they have that kind of power and control, then we have no one to blame but ourselves. So, you know, that's why I stated earlier, on the one hand, I sympathize and empathize with the parents who may not even know their child isn't in school. They might even drop their child off and think their child is at school, and don't know their child skips school third period every day. They may not even know that. And so, you know, there's some investigating process. There's an investigative process from, you know, point A to point B. I hope it's not, you know, whenever the bell goes off in the computer system, that little Johnny been gone for 10 days, that it's an automatic cutoff. I'm hoping that there is a part in there where people are, which I doubt it, but I'm just going to really hope that someone is calling me to say, hey, you know, your child's been out of school for 5 days, or it may not even be 5 days altogether, but in the last 30 days, your child has missed 5 days. Has he been sick? Is something going on? And if I don't know that my child hasn't been in school, then that gives me a red flag. So I'm not sure how it's going to play out. I just hope it's not as reactive as I'm feeling that it's going to be. But it's unfortunate that this law was even allowed to pass. And laws like this can only pass when registered voters don't go and vote, and when non-registered voters don't get registered to go and vote. So that's how stuff like this happens. And so because of the apathy of the citizens of Michigan, they failed to light enough fire to get this a national, because this should have been national attention now, long before it's ready to be enacted into law come tomorrow. So, I mean, it's a lot of questions, and I need to do some more research to find out if what I'm thinking and feeling is legitimate in terms of factual, or if it's just made up in my mind in terms of how this might play itself out.
Well, you know, which you brought up a good point about the politics part of this, right? I mean, that just goes to show you that all politics is local. You know, when they sneak these things on these ballots, right, when they're voting for the city councilman, or they're voting for the governor, or they're voting for something that's local, we need to look at what's on the ballot. We need to be more engaged on what's happening in our local community, because it has a profound impact on our lives way more than a lot of the federal legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, herein lies the reason why when the president has been in office, he hasn't been able to get a lot done, because the Republicans knew how powerful and how smart that President Obama was or is. So therefore, they went on a campaign to start hiring state legislators, governors and senators and House of Representatives, so they can get in and change the system, you know, in a divide and conquer type of situation. Because they knew that President Obama was not going to let this stuff get across his desk. I mean, he's too smart for that. You know, people can say what they want to about him, but he's too smart, too concerned about the American people. Mm-hmm. You know, when he talks about the 47%, he says, I want to fight for you too, as opposed to pushing them aside. So we know, not just through his words, but through his deeds, that he's concerned mm-hmm. about the majority of the people. And so it's incumbent upon us as the people to really get more engaged on what's happening at our local levels. And so we're going to talk a little bit more of this after the break when we return. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We will be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Sema, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Boone friend.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Patrick Cook.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. A firefight between U.S. troops and their Afghan allies turned deadly today. NATO says at least two Americans and three Afghan soldiers were killed. Lieutenant General Adrian Bradshaw is a spokesman for NATO's defense force in Afghanistan. He told reporters in Kabul today's shooting was first blamed on a rogue Afghan soldier. This was known as an insider attack. Now Bradshaw says that may be incorrect.
What was initially reported to have been a suspected insider attack is now understood possibly to have involved insurgent fire.
The fighting apparently broke out when insurgents fired a mortar into a checkpoint set up by U.S. forces. The Afghan Defense Ministry says the battle that followed was the result of a misunderstanding. President Obama is scheduled to campaign later today in Las Vegas, Nevada. He's also prepping for Wednesday night's debate with Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney. GOP vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan says the GOP presidential ticket is working to point out the president's shortcomings.
The president is trying to paper over his problems. The president has been trying to mislead and distort the record. It's a failed record. We think it was very important to point that out.
Ryan also says the president is a gifted speaker with many years of experience on a national stage. He says the debate marks Mr. Romney's first time in this forum. However, Mitt Romney participated in many high-profile debates as a primary candidate and during his previous campaigns for president. Tomorrow's the first Monday in October. That means it's the opening day of a new Supreme Court term. NPR's Nina Totenberg has this preview.
It would be hard to beat the cataclysmic, cacophonous end of last term and the historic decision upholding the Obama health care law. But this term will almost certainly make banner headlines, too. Although the court has twice before ruled that state colleges and universities can use race as one of many factors in admissions decisions, a new conservative court majority has decided to revisit the issue. Likewise, it is expected to turn a skeptical eye on the voting rights law, even though it upheld the act just 3 years ago. But perhaps the most emotional decision facing the court is gay marriage and whether the 1996 federal law defining marriage as between a man and a woman amounts to unconstitutional discrimination. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
People in France are the latest to march against government austerity measures. Tens of thousands of people turned out in Paris today to protest government spending cuts and tax hikes imposed in other European countries. These are intended to fight the slowing economy. The French Parliament is going to debate a European fiscal treaty this week. The measure will create a new bailout fund that Europe hopes to use to settle a debt crisis. This is NPR. The Republic of Georgia is preparing for a parliamentary election tomorrow that could change the leadership of the pro-Western country on Russia's border. NPR's Corey Flintoff reports support for the opposition has surged following a prison abuse scandal.
Georgia's election pits a pro-Western government against an opposition coalition led by a billionaire businessman who made most of his money in Russia. That leader, Bidzina Ivanishvili, has put tens of millions of dollars into his effort to defeat the government, which he says has become corrupt and authoritarian. The government is led by President Mikhail Saakashvili, who was widely regarded as a reformer when he was elected after the 2003 Rose Revolution. The government was predicted to win the election until just over a week ago, when videos surfaced showing inmates being beaten and sexually abused in Georgia's prisons. Corey Flintoff, NPR News, Washington.
There were several deadly bombings in Iraq today. They killed at least 26 people from the northern city of Kirkuk to the southern town of Kut. No one has claimed responsibility for the attack, but suspicion is on al-Qaeda. The bombings also came a few days after dozens of al-Qaeda militants escaped an Iraqi prison during a jailbreak. Fighting continues in Syria. An attacker set off a car bomb in northeastern Syria today, killing at least four people and injuring scores of others. The attack was in a Kurdish region of the country. The Kurds have largely not taken sides in the fight between the government and the rebels. There are also reports of additional violence in the northern city of Aleppo. Five people died today in fighting. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I want to kind of continue the conversation a little bit about politics before we shift to our entertainment section. And I want to talk a little bit about Newt Gingrich's comments. Now, he said that President Obama was not a real president. Now, I don't know if you've heard this or not, but I'm going to tell you a little bit about what happened. Former House Speaker Newt Gingrich ripped President Obama for not meeting with world leaders on his trip to the United Nations on Friday. He said that Obama is not a real president. Obama, he says, really is like the substitute National Football League referees in the sense that he's not a real president. This is what he told Greta Van Susteren on Fox News. He said he doesn't do anything that presidents do. He doesn't worry about any of the things that presidents do, but he has the White House. He has enormous power, and he'll go down in history as a president, and I suspect that he's pretty contemptuous of the rest of the rest of us. Jim, what do you make of Newt Gingrich's statement about calling President Obama not a real president? Is that a dog whistle, or is that a bull?
No, that ain't a dog whistle. That's a big whistle. Everybody heard that. Not just the dogs. Everybody heard that, and he was intent. That was his shout out to the birthers. That was his shout out to those that want the president to be a Muslim. He sounded the alarm on that one very loud, and no one, in my opinion, has really taken him to task on that. I didn't really hear any media really chastising him for making that statement. And these are the things that the president has to deal with every day that he's been in office. He's had to deal with these things. At some point, you would think people just get tired of just making up stuff. But here we go again, with the great intellectual professor himself, Newt Gingrich, making that asinine statement and then not really being challenged on it, So it's obvious that the president met with whom he needed to meet with. And I can't remember the guy, I think he was the president of Jordan or somebody, that was on Jon Stewart's show the other night. And Jon Stewart on the Daily Show asked him about, the issue in terms of if it was an issue that the president wasn't meeting with certain types of people. And that particular foreign administrator, president, was like, no, that's an issue for you all in America, but that's not something we're talking about. So even the people with whom they're trying to say he's shunned and he's not really, playing fair with, they're not even concerned about it. So, and it wasn't even about him meeting with foreign leaders. It was a statement, and it was how he said it, that he's not a real president. That just goes to the legitimacy of him being in office. So once again, let's bring up the fact that this black man, who happens to be the president of the United States, couldn't possibly really be real. This has to be a dream. It just can't be reality. Almost 4 years later, they're still trying to make him not be real.
So you mentioned the fact that most media outlets really didn't challenge him on that. They just let him say it over and over again, or they would play the sound bites over and over again. And so that begs the question, when Mitt Romney makes his gaffes, and he has made many of them, why is it then that the media has really not been friendly to a Mitt Romney like they would for this extremist like Newt Gingrich? Because obviously Newt has been able to get away with this kind of rhetoric for a long time. But here's Mitt Romney, and, the last 90 days has been horrific for him. So is he really trying to win the campaign, or is the Republican Party really behind Mitt Romney?
I don't know, really. And I would hope that Mitt Romney hasn't done all this for what? I mean, why run for the highest office of the land and not really want to win? I mean, that's just like, I don't get that. So you have him, and maybe, listening to what you just stated, maybe the reason why no one has really challenged what Newt Gingrich says because he's no longer relevant. And maybe he made that statement to be relevant, I mean, you're not running for anything. Nobody has to talk to you about anything. And the fact that you was on TV at that moment, was probably because they didn't have nobody else to schedule. So, I mean, I guess on the one hand, it's kind of like with the whole Ann Coulter. Do you really entertain her nonsense? Because the more you entertain it, the more fire you give to her and the more power you give to her. So maybe that's why they didn't, go back behind Newt Gingrich and say anything. But
yeah,
the reason why they're challenging
that.
Mitt Romney, because he is running for president. And I'm going to push back a little bit on the gaffes, because gaffes are things you don't mean to say, or you said them and they were taken out of context or something. Mitt Romney hadn't said anything that was a gaffe. Everything he said, he meant to say. He just didn't mean for it to be repeated. That's the difference.
Okay. All right.
You know, the gaffe is Joe Biden, Vice President Biden, wants the health care law was signed, and he leans over to the president and says, this is a big effing deal. That's a gaffe, right? Mitt Romney really meant everything he said about the 47%. He really meant that he don't care for the poor. And all of those are in one-on-one conversations. You know, so for them to say he does better one-on-one than he does off the cuff, you ought to be able to do both, because as president, you're going to be required to do both.
Right.
So, I mean, when you have your press briefing, you're not going to get a list of questions before they ask you, and then you know how to answer them, because that's not a press conference. A press conference is on the spur. I come out, I say what I got to say, and then you ask me some questions about what I just said. And I should, if I'm good at what I do, just repeat what I've already said to you, because I'm not going to say anything different. So I'm not sure if we can even give Mitt Romney a pass on the gaffes, because I don't think they've really been gaffes. I think that's how he really feels. You look at his wife, who, you know, made the comment the other day, her biggest concern for him if he gets elected is his mental health. But what in the John Brown does that mean?
Right, right.
And why aren't we talking about it? Is it because we're just resolved that he is not going to be the president, so we really don't have to be concerned about his mental health? But imagine if Michelle had said that 4 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just imagine. Imagine if Michelle had said half of what Ann Romney has said 4 years ago. Just imagine. I mean, they made up stuff Michelle said, you know, bigger than anything that Ann Romney has said now. And Ann Romney's stuff has been real. So, you know, I'm not giving Mitt Romney a pass on his gaffe, because if you put your name in the hat, you wanted to be president, you went through the process, and the only thing you haven't done that other presidential candidates have done is that you have not released your tax return. So, in my opinion, until he does that, he's not a real candidate. He's still a wannabe candidate to me. You do what you're supposed to do to run for office, then me and you, you know, I'll respect you. But right now, I have no respect for you, because you're not doing what every other president has done, and nor are you doing what you require people to do for you. See, what leaders do is leaders lead, right, by example. So if I am requesting something of my staff, of the people that are working for me or the people that answer to me, they ought to know that I am willing to do the same thing. So when I was at a facility and we were running short coverage, I didn't mind covering a shift. See, I'm not going to ask you to give up your days and weekends and family time, and I'm not willing to give up mine. But Mitt Romney releasing a year and a half of tax returns and yet required the people he was vetting for vice president to give up 10. So you're not even willing. So you're not even willing to stand up to your own standard. How can I respect you as someone that's serious about being president of the United States when you're not even willing to do what you're asking someone else to do? It's a joke. It's a joke.
Yeah, I have
and
to
the
hear
only
you.
Reason why he's still in it is because he's white, he's a male, and he's a Republican. There's no way on this side of the dirt that a Democrat could get away with what this man has got away with and still be a contender. Give me a break. Give me a break.
You mentioned Mitt Romney's tax plan, right? So Republican vice presidential nominee Paul Ryan promised on Sunday, today, that Mitt Romney's tax plans would bring lower tax rates for all Americans while remaining revenue neutral, although he didn't fully explain how he would accomplish this. So, of course, the Obama campaign blasted Romney Ryan ticket for not providing details on how it would give Americans such a large tax breaks without growing the deficit. So Ryan reiterated in an interview on Fox News Sunday that the plan would drop taxpayers' bills by 20% without costing a dime due to closed tax loopholes. But he was short on specifics when pressed by Chris Wallace. Here's what Chris Wallace said. You haven't given me the math. And then here's what Ryan says. I don't have the, it would take me too long to go through all the math. That's what Ryan responded with. But let me say it this way. You can lower tax rates 20% across the board by closing loopholes. Jima, what is the deal? Why are they not giving us the details?
Okay, let me quote President Clinton from the Democratic National Convention, where he said the math just don't add up. The arithmetic
right.
just doesn't add up.
Right.
Period. So they really thought that the American people was going to stay asleep long enough to not really pay attention to the facts. And that worked during the primary. See, they never shifted from primary to general. See, and they thought they were talking to the listeners of Fox News. Because we know, according to data, this isn't Jima speaking, according to data and reports and studies, that most people that watch Fox News are the most misinformed and uninformed in the country. So that's why they can go on Fox News and say that it will reduce the deficit by $1 trillion, but don't have to tell you how they're going to reduce it, because it's not going to reduce it. Every independent fact checker, and economists who have looked at their plan all say the same thing. It is going to increase. It's not going to do anything to decrease anything. So that's why he can't go through the numbers, because they don't add up. It's simple. It is very, very simple. And the fact that finally somebody is asking, you know, a follow-up question.
Right, right.
And that's the debate I'm waiting to see as well. I'm waiting to see Paul Ryan try to go up against Joe Biden. You can say what you want to about Joe Biden. Joe Biden knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, he had the experience.
I mean, he's a true soldier when it comes to politics. It ain't a whole lot you're going to be able to pull over Joe Biden. So I'm waiting for Paul Ryan to come in being pompous and arrogant and condescending to Joe Biden, because that's not going to be a pretty turnout for him.
Right.
That's the one I'm waiting on. Because the president got to stay presidential. Joe Biden can go ahead and come off crazy, because everybody expects him to anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Crazy
Joe.
So, you know.
Crazy Joe.
Crazy right. Joe. We
That's
waiting
right.
on Crazy Joe.
Yeah. So I want to shift the conversation now to a little lighter subject. I want to talk a little bit about some entertainment, right? We had
my goodness.
Well, I'm gonna let you talk about it, because it kind of shocked me that we're still in 2012 talking about the BET Awards and talking about people fighting, grown men, old men. These ain't young guys. I mean, back in the day, you know, when they was kind of young, you can expect high heads to flop. We're talking about what, Rick Ross and Jeezy. These guys
right.
are not young anymore. What
right.
are they doing fighting at the BET Awards, Jim?
Okay, let's preface it that it was a hip hop award.
I mean, the hip-hop award, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Right, the BET hip-hop award.
Right, right.
So let's hope that makes a difference, right?
Yeah, but
so
still, though, I mean, but still.
Well, I'm with you, but you don't want to tank the BET award with the hip-hop award.
I agree with that. But still, I mean, but the hip-hop award, regardless, I mean, they still doing it like this. What's going on that they have to be brawling at this day and age? I mean, you know, it's bad enough that we you know, the president is going through what he's going through, and most African Americans don't have jobs based on the statistics, right? And the ones do are not making a lot, and so they can support their families. And we have a lot more issues in education. I mean, every statistical a point that one makes, we're either on the bottom because we're doing the best, I mean, the worst, or we're at the very top because we're doing the worst. At either rate, we don't need to be at each other's throat. We need to be trying to lift each other up. What is going on with these guys?
Okay, so I hear all that what you're saying, and at the end of the day, you're dealing with a group of people. I'm not even sure we still need to have the hip-hop awards, honestly, because what is hip-hop doing that it deserves its own awards? Nothing. Hip-hop back in the day stood for something. I'm not real sure what this is doing. And it could just be because I'm 44 and I don't really understand it, but, you know, it – And so I'll yield to that. But when you got grown men who are beefing, for lack of a better term, over I don't know what, because as you just stated, they're not owning much of anything. Whatever label they own, I don't even think they own their own label. So what are they beefing on? They're beefing over something that don't even belong to them, right?
I have
to agree. In the parking lot, whatever happened on the inside carries over to outside, and now you got somebody outside in their car with a gun and decides they want to shoot. What was the point? What was it? And it doesn't even matter what it was about. Y'all too old for that. I don't
exactly.
care what it was. It
exactly.
doesn't matter.
So it,
you
and
make
here,
a million, you're making millions of dollars. You probably don't have $1 million, but you're making millions of dollars. And you're known all around the world for the crazy stuff you spew out anyway, the hatred, the male chauvinisticness of your music, all the sexual implications and all the negativity that's coming out of it. You're known worldwide for just that. And so here you are now just perpetuating the cycle of wretchedness, in my opinion. I don't even want to talk about it. Because I'm just disgusted. When I saw it on Twitter, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Seriously?
So I mean,
and it was in Atlanta. So here we are in the ATL.
Yeah,
once again,
yeah,
we're down
ATL,
in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Here we go.
So tension exploded between Rick Ross, MMG crew, and Young Jeezy's camp, and G-Unit in Atlanta this weekend. During Saturday's taping for the BET's 2012 Hip Hop Awards in Atlanta. And Rosé and the Snowman, Young Jeezy, reportedly got into a shoving match backstage before the scuffle spilled outside into the parking lot. Shots were fired, and at least one man was said to be arrested. That's not all. Multiple sources who witnessed the fray confirmed to MTV News that Ross' protege Gunplay was also involved in fisticuffs with members of 50 Cent's G-Unit camp. Guns were seen with visible wounds, and a witness told us that Miami MC was put into handcuffs and detained. But a separate source disclosed to Gunplay told us that he was not arrested. What? I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, this is crazy to me that these old men, first of all, fighting. I mean, there's nothing in my opinion, to be fighting over. Nothing.
Zero.
Exactly. And for them to go out and portray this image, and then, you know, and for how people follow them and follow this type of behavior, is really setting a bad example. You know, hip hop has not. This is not the staple of hip hop. They have somehow shaped hip hop to be this thug life. Not necessarily just Rick Ross and Jeezy, but the trend. It has been a transition into what hip hop is really about, right? I mean, they have transitioned into this murderous, thuggish lifestyle, and you got to do this and got to do that, and guns, and you know, and wearing, you know, and wearing the badge of honor by going to jail. Hip hop has not been that. And
that's
so,
not how it started.
Exactly.
How it evolved or devolved, shall I say,
exactly.
into that is amazing, and it's happened, you know, subtly and over time, where you had one, and he was like, ooh, he kind of out there. And then, you know, then you had one chick to come out and be like, ooh, she kind of out there. Now it's everybody. And it's just, you know, you got, you know, one bad apple did spoil it, you know. So they can say what they want to, but there's an audience for it. I don't know who it is with sense, but there's an audience for it. And I can understand, you know, it's just a way of expressing yourself, but you can express yourself without cussing me out and calling me every name in the book and without every other word being a cuss word and you alluding to your sexual private parts and all that kind of stuff. If you don't have nothing else to talk about, then maybe you don't need to be rapping. That's just my theory.
Exactly.
And I have the same theory, you know, about, you know, singers. If every song you ever put out is always about sex, and turn the lights down and bumping and grinding. And, you know, I'm an R. Kelly fan. Before you even say it, I put my
no,
own disclaimer out.
12 plays.
I'm an R. Kelly fan, but not all of R. Kelly's music is not like that. So let me put
now,
that
I went
out
to go listen. I went to listen to 12 plays not too long ago, and I just can't. It hurt my ears to listen to him
talk
like that.
Whatever, Patrick. But you listen to Lil Wayne while you on the treadmill. So.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So there you have it.
So let's talk a little bit about being scandalous, right? scandal by Kerry Washington. I thought it was a pretty good opening day for her. What do you think?
Oh, man. You still have people on Twitter talking about the opening night, because you maybe had some that DVR'd it and didn't see it. So I know yesterday there were still people that was talking about who is Quinn and what really happened and who was Julia Pope really covering for at that time. So everybody has a theory already on the secrets, because that's what Scandal is all about. It's all about the secrets. Now, I'm concerned about the president's wife. She's a cold piece, I have to admit. Now, she's a cold piece. I'm trying to figure out, though, whether or not she, this whole pregnancy thing seems kind of weird.
And I mean, does it fake? You think it's fake?
No, she's pregnant. I wonder if it's his.
Ah, okay.
I mean, we talking Scandal, so you just never know. But I think the going back, them showing us that Hulk, had erased some footage from the tapes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think was now everybody's like, what? Them two? What? They go all the way back? So you got those kind of questions. But I say we pay attention, because if you miss a second, you just miss a key piece of evidence, I think. So you really, because like I was telling you about the building in the background, I think had something to do with something. I don't know, but, I love conspiracy theories. So I'm thinking that this season is going to be hot. It's going to be one where people, like I said, it's Saturday night and people are still talking about Scandal, and it came on Thursday.
Yeah, I was thinking about two things. One, the fact that if people out there that has not seen it, it's on Netflix right now, and you can download. I mean, you can actually go to Netflix and get a and watch the pilot season to kind of get caught up if you haven't seen it. But I think that I think Kerry Washington does a lot for just the show. Not the fact that she's a great actress. Not the fact that she really makes the role come alive, but the fact that she's a leading African-American woman on a highly televised show playing that role. I mean, you can't really beat that, and it's almost unprecedented that to have someone play this role and play the leading character in a role such a way that it's being played. I mean, it certainly hasn't been that way in the last couple of decades. And we can go back in the time and see other shows of this magnitude that has an impact. But Kerry Washington, to me, I would say she is the new Halle Berry in a lot of different ways. But she has definitely raised the bar when it comes to playing this type of role. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you have her role. You have Taraji P. Henson's role in Point Person of Interest. That's another one that comes on, and then you have, I can't think of her name right now, off of Grey's Anatomy, the doctor there on Grey's Anatomy. And so, we are showing up in different places, and there's a new show coming out with Vanessa Williams on it tonight on ABC. I think it's called 666 Park Avenue. So I think, there's some growth there, but there's so much more to be done, because, we can do a little bit of it all. And so, but I think Kerry Washington is a great actress, and she really does become, you really believe her when she's acting. And so when you see her in person or doing interviews, it's like it's hard to disassociate her from her character. Because she's so believable in that character.
That's true.
So
Stan and I entertainment segment, I want to talk a little bit about the last couple of weeks of Oprah's Life Class. We haven't really talked about it, but I gathered from you that there was a couple of good episodes that were on, and it really had an impact on the people that were watching. You want to take a few minutes to talk about the last two segments that were relevant.
Well, she's had a couple of life classes that talked about secrets that women keep, or secrets that we have, and then another one was on why women treat each other the way that we do. And so those were her last two life classes. And so when you're talking about secrets, there was a young lady that stood up and told the world basically about a child she had had to give up for adoption. Her parents made her give it up for adoption. She never told anybody ever about this child. She doesn't even know what a child is to this day. And she's carried that with her for forever, where even her current children and even siblings did not know about that child. And so what has that done to her? And what do secrets do to us when we hold on to them? And the power is in the secret. The shame is in the secret. So, you know, and so just talking about when you release the secret, you release the shame. And a lot of times we hold on to the secret thinking we're protecting someone, protecting ourselves, and in reality we are allowing that thing to manifest itself in our lives in so many different ways. And so, you know, that was the one about, you know, keeping secrets. And then the one in terms of how women tend to treat one another, there's always a sense of competition going on and not wanting anyone to be more than or better than. We compare. And it's like the difference between men and women is men don't really care about what another man thinks. So if you doing your thing and I'm doing my thing, then we good. Women tend to look over to see what the next woman is doing. And because of that, we sometimes sabotage one another and we sometimes cost each other a lot of hardship and a lot of pain unnecessarily. I think the other thing along with that has been Iyanla's Fix My Life reality series that comes on Saturday evenings, and it's really reality. She's met with different people, and last night she was with a young lady who had an affair and left her husband and two kids behind and basically was gone for like 4 years or more, but has come back, you know, six times, and this was the seventh time she wanted to come back home. But what eventually came out of all of that was she doesn't like where she is there in the small town in Nebraska, and she was trying to use her kids to validate her, to make her complete. And what she was doing was raising her sons to believe that women can't be trusted.
Now, are these celebrity type people? Are these celebrity type people?
Or these are just regular people?
Okay.
These are regular people.
Okay.
But now she did have one with celebrity with Evelyn Lozado, which was Ochocinco's wife, now ex-wife. She did have a two-part series with her a couple of weeks ago as well. And when it first aired, when they first taped, it was actually before anything had happened, or before we knew anything was happening. But what Iyanla told her, even before knowing anything was going on, she told her at that moment that her marriage was in trouble. And this was before anything happened. So after, she goes back and talks to her in terms of how did we get here? How did you get here? And so she talks about her father not being in her life, and he had cheated on her mother, and you know, the love she had always wanted from her father and not ever getting, how it led to her having a promiscuous lifestyle, getting pregnant at 15, and so all of those sorts of things. And what we fail to remember and realize, and this is what I love about it, is that we fail to realize how the things and issues of our childhood definitely have an impact on how we are as adults. And so we, working in institutional care and treatment facilities my whole career, one of the things we used to talk about working in the state of Missouri, we used to talk about that inner child. And so when you're dealing with the issues of the inner child, you have to take care of the inner child, because all along that inner child is trying to take care of you, the adult. And so they're never getting what they always needed. There's things everybody has a need to fit in, belong, be loved. Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and those things play out in our lives in so many different ways when those needs are not met. So for every show in Life Class or Iyanla's show, or even, you know, some other things on the OWN Network, when you are dealing with unmet issues and unmet needs, which leads to unresolved issues, they will have an impact on how you live your adult life. We don't think that they do, and we don't really pay attention to the signs, but they have an impact on your adult life.
Yeah, but most people most people don't realize that they have childhood issues, right? I mean, you kind of go through life in a trance or in a state of hypnosis because of all of these external factors are always, pressing on you. And in fact, you know, that in many cases allow people to block those childhood things out. So how does one then, you know, get a chance to get in touch with that inner child if they're walking around basically in a state of hypnosis?
Well, you as Yala says, you have to call a thing a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things you have to do, you have to call it what it is. And a lot of times we don't do that. And so you got to go talk your way through it. And talking your way through it isn't in the bottle. It isn't in the pill. It isn't in the weed. It's going to some trained professional who can help you maneuver and bring you out of that hypnotic state and bring you back into reality. Because you're right, a lot of times we walk around so many different kinds of ways and not really even paying attention to what's happening and thinking that, oh, it's what my mama had to go through, it's what my grandma did, so this must be the life I'm supposed to have as well. I mean, and you can apply that to so many things. When you look at the cycle of poverty, and you look at, you know, how some people, you know, you have generations that's been on assistance, you know, some sort of government's assistance, because that's somebody told them that's all that there was, and so they grew up thinking, well, I got to have my first child at 14 so I can go ahead and get these food stamps or go ahead and get this, you know, whatever, because somebody has told them that that's the only way to go, and until somebody breaks that or until somebody brings it to their attention, they walk around in that hypnotic state, as you so eloquently stated, not realizing that that's not normal.
You know, and something key you said, too, I want to kind of emphasize here is the fact that when we have problems, right, you know, and going back to that inner child, and it takes us a while to get there. You don't get there immediately. You don't know it's that inner child. You have to go through layers and layers. And we
right.
always, or we tend to go to our friends or our family member and get these diagnoses from people that are not professionals, right? And so I want to emphasize the point that you talked about going to see a professional. You know, I hate to say this, but in a lot of cases, the things that are physically wrong with us have been manifested because of the things that are mentally wrong with us. And so, and people really don't realize the importance of this healthcare legislation, because it's not really only talking about just your physical healthcare, but it's also talking about your mental state. Because
right.
There's going to be services available for you. You can now go get a checkup, just like you would go get a checkup for your body. We always, you know, we don't always, but I could say we tend to go to the dentist. We tend to go get an annual checkup biannual or whatever.
But we
tend to go get checkups when it's available. We also need to take that same approach when our mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're going through some issues, and if you're smoking weed every day, that's a problem. You may not
right.
think it's a problem, but that's a problem. If you're drinking alcohol every day and talking like you can
right.
handle it and you can function, there is a problem. If you're
right.
really having sex every day with 9-10 different people all the time, that is a problem.
Right.
So in order to get in touch with that inner child, go talk to someone. Go talk to
and
a professional.
And if you're eating gallons of ice cream every day.
Yeah, that's a problem.
That's a problem.
If and
you
these
have
problems,
to have it. Anything
yeah.
that you have to have that you cannot go without is a problem.
And these problems manifest themselves in so many different ways, right?
Right, right. If you have to go to the store every day and spend $5 every day, that's a problem. If you have to go, and as you would say, I mean, if you have to do something like that every day, it is a problem, and you need to go and speak with someone to kind of help you navigate those waters. And so when you're talking about, you know, that inner child, what you do is you pull back the layers to to find out. Because what generally happens is you get a headache and you're like, oh, I got a headache. So you don't connect the headache to anything you've eaten, to how you're sleeping, to staring at a computer screen all day. So you just get a headache. So you go to the doctor and you say, I got a headache. But then they want to give you something for the symptom. The symptom is the headache. Your shopping, your drinking, your having sex with everybody, your overeating, your gossiping, whatever you're doing, whatever your it is, that is a symptom of what your real problem is. So you've got to find out what the real problem is. Because if I just give you something for your headache and then you fall out from an aneurysm, that means I was just treating the symptom. I never got to what was wrong with you.
And that's one thing about our bodies, right? They always give us warning signs. They always give us warning signs. I remember one of our star players on the TaylorMade team, Lois. She has a show called Let's Talk Truth. And I remember a show she did about ignoring the warning signs. She emphasized the fact that we see yield signs, we see stop signs, we see red lights, and we pretty much follow those warning signs or those signs. But when it comes to our body, the headache, when it comes to our body, when that side ache or those things, we tend to ignore the warning signs. When we're smoking weed every day, drinking alcohol, having sex with all these people, or overeating, those are warning signs. And so I'm saying, and Jimmy, I'm glad you brought this up about the inner child. It may be a byproduct of what's going on with that inner child. That inner child is protecting you as opposed to you protecting the inner child. So, you know, it was interesting that you brought that up. And I want to kind of emphasize the fact that go see a professional. Just like your physical health records are confidential, your mental health records are also confidential. No one knows about those visits and things of that nature. So don't take of it as if you're crazy. Take of it as you're trying to, you know, cure a cold. Or the same emphasis you would put on when you hurt your ankle or you have high blood pressure or you have sugar, you should take your mental health just as seriously because it's just as important.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jimmy. Yes, go ahead and continue on about Ayana. You wanted to talk a little bit about the show. You said you were mentioning the first person that was not a celebrity.
Right, and it was just interesting, you know, how it all played itself out in terms of what she eventually had told the husband, which was her ex-husband by this point, some things that happened to her as a child. And how she had been molested by her stepfather, and her mother didn't really do anything to protect her. So she was basically sort of reliving that cycle of abuse, not even realizing that that's what she was doing. And so that's why I just say it's very important that you take a hard look at your life. And if all is well, I mean, I go to the doctor religiously every February and March for my yearly exam, not because I have a problem, not because something is bothering me, but because it's time for my yearly exam. And so if I don't go during that year, then I won't know if there's something going on internally that I can't see, feel, touch, or smell. So I go every year because that's what I'm supposed to do to take care of myself. I have my mammogram every year to take care, to check. You know, I do my own self-check, but I go get on the machine every year to make sure that all is well. So the same thing applies to your mental well-being, as you stated. All may be well in your life. You might not have any addictions. You might not have any issues, but you just might want to talk through your next life plan. You might just want to talk to someone unbiased who don't know you, don't know your husband, your children, or don't know anything about you, but yet let them help guide you to wherever that next, you know, course you have for yourself. And as believers, and I have to say this, as believers, those of us that believe, you know, we tend to be the last ones to go get some help because we want to pray everything away. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with prayer, but God also imparted wisdom to people for you to go see them as well. Just like when you're sick physically and you want to pray that hurt away, you still need to go to the doctor. Prayer works, But what's the scripture? You know, you still got to work. You still got to go do something in order to make that prayer and that faith be what it's supposed to be. Faith without works is dead.
There you go. That's
so
right,
you
James.
You still got to go do something. You know, prayer is you know. So yeah, I'm gonna pray about my situation, but I'm also gonna go talk to somebody because maybe I'm missing something in the natural. Because it might not be in the spiritual. It might be in the natural that you need to face whatever that thing is you need to face, and then you call on the spiritual to help you with, to give you the strength to make it through. So they go hand in hand. So I just had to, you know, throw that little piece out there because sometimes, you know, everybody wants you to take stuff to the altar and leave it there. Yeah, but if it's still on you when you get up from the altar, that's the spirit tugging on you, telling you to go get some help. So,
and God made it clear. I mean, he gave us all gifts, right? I mean, people have
right.
gifts to do certain things. He gave us the gifts of prophecy. He gave us the gifts of teaching and preaching. I mean, there are gifts out there, and God wants us to use them all, right? So don't get caught up into, I can do this on my own, when God has clearly given people gifted hands to be able to help heal you. So, you know, they always talk about the fact that person out there swimming, and he sent the boat and the helicopter and all these things came out there. And then he said, and when he goes to heaven, he said, God was waiting on you. He said, well, I sent you a boat and a helicopter. You know, so, it, you know, we really need to, you know, faith without works is dead. And so we really need to take heed to that. I want to shift now, Jima, for the last segment here before we close the show about a little bit about early voting. I want to emphasize the fact that we should really, really, really consider early voting. Because voting, exercising your right as voting is what's important. You know, not necessarily waiting to election day to vote, because who knows what can happen. Not to mention, at this day and age, they're doing everything to intimidate people, to lock you out on Voters Day, to shorten the time that you can get there. So let's talk a little bit about early voting and the importance of it, Jamie. What do you think about that?
I agree with that. I totally agree with that. I think this will probably be the first year that I will do early voting, because for some reason I was locked into some mentality that voting on voting day really meant something, when in reality what the issue is, me voting is what means something. So,
right.
You know, and since I can't predict the future, and I may not be around come November 6th, and while I'm here, I need to go ahead and take care of what I can take care of and let November 6th take care of itself. And so for those that won't have – so my goal is to vote early and then be a blessing or be a vessel for those that may not have the opportunity to vote early, to maybe take some people to the polls and ensure that their rights are not being disenfranchised. So I think, you know, we ought to do a lot more around voting early instead of, you know, waiting, because as you say, you never know what may happen. And as laws are being perpetuated and put out there every single day, just go on and get in now and get it over with. And so that's my challenge for this year, this election cycle, is to go out and vote early and then be able to be available to get people to where they need to get to on voting day in case they can't do early voting.
Yeah, and so for people that are able-bodied people, and that could mean a lot of things, you know, so I'm not really saying that you're unable or anything like that, but for able-bodied people that are available to do early voting, I would encourage you to do so for two specific reasons. Number one, you go ahead and get your vote counted, right? You don't have to go through all of the hoopla that's being preventing people from going to vote. Even if you do are met with some type of resistance, you have plenty of time, weeks or days, as opposed to one day, right? So that's your first advantage, to try to early vote. So if somebody comes up to you and say, nope, you need this, you need that, you have time to react. That would be number one. Number two, I would encourage people to go out there and early vote, because when you get your vote cast, you can now check the box and you can start now to going out and supporting people that cannot get to the polls. So a part of the early voting, I would encourage you to make a list. Everybody out there, make a list of the people that they know, that they have influence on, and that they can go out and call them and says, have you voted? Because if you wait to voters, you know, to election day, and you go to the poll and they tell you don't have the right ID or your ID expired or you can't get there for some unknown reason, then you might as well not vote. It's just like a vote for Mitt Romney or a vote for the opposing force. So when people say, I'm not voting, you are voting. Because if you don't cast a vote, you're casting a ballot for the opposing force, whatever that may be. So if I don't vote, I'm casting a vote for Mitt Romney. That's why I'm going to make sure that my vote is counted for the person that I want to another 4 years. And that's President Barack Obama. Make no mistake about it.
So I think it's also important for those that haven't registered to get that done sooner rather than later. So you know, get everything done that you need to have done so that you can be registered. Most of the cutoffs is coming up here in October. I know here in the state of Texas is October 8th is the last day to register to vote. And so we're running out of time here. We're definitely running out of time. And so we need to get it done, and we need to be, you know, diligent about it. You know, my mom is 71 years old, and she has registered, I want to say, more than 20 people to vote in her community where she lives, knocking on doors, going down to the food kitchen, wherever she's in the park. She does a clothing giveaway out of her home every when the seasons change. And she had one this weekend, and several people came by, and she has a sign in the window that says, you can register to vote here, or something along those lines. And she had a young lady registered right there on the spot. So I don't want to hear about what you can't do when my mother, who is 71 years old, is out doing it. She's not just talking about it. She's getting it done, and she's 71. So I have no excuse whatsoever and to not just not talk about it, but to find ways to help. And I know at one of our church members' barbershops yesterday, we set up voter registration there, and I think she got about 6 or 7 people registered there. We're going to try another salon here later on this week. So, you know, people out there, be thinking of places you haven't even thought about going and finding out if people are registered. And if they tell you they don't want to vote or they can't vote, you know, don't argue with them. Just keep it moving. Go find somebody that will.
Yeah, and I also want to emphasize the fact that sometimes people don't really consider the fact that they turn 18 after the voter registration deadline, but before mm-hmm. the election. There's a window there where voters registration closed, and I think you mentioned October the 8th. But between October the 8th, for example, October the 9th through November 5th, or afterwards, before the election, you turn 18. So you want to make sure that you're registered, and you can register before you turn 18 if your birthday is between that time period, meaning that you turn 18 before your birthday. So I would encourage you to go out and check your state and see whether the laws are around those. But you can apply for voter registration and participate in that election as long as you meet the voter's qualification. So please note that you must turn your voter registration application in before the deadline closes. But if you're not 18 on that day and you turn 18 before the election day, you can still vote in this election. In a lot of cases, people don't realize that if you are in your church or in the barbershop, as Jima mentioned, other people that you go with in school, take an opportunity to ask those people, are they registered to vote? This is the most critical time in our lifetime to make sure that we get another 4 years out of President Obama. I mean, that means that health care will be set in stone and we can do all those wonderful things that we talked about earlier. So, Jima, what are your final thoughts?
My final thought, on a happy note for me, I will be going to Houston this week for a live taping of Oprah's Life Class. I am so excited. I'm about to burst because I cannot wait. And this particular Life Class will have Minister Joel Osteen there from the big mega church down there in Houston. He's going to be speaking on positive thinking and how to move out of your current situation. So I'm kind of excited about that. I'm excited that we have our first debate on Wednesday. I hope everyone will tune in and see for yourselves the difference between the two candidates. Let no one make your mind up for you. Be ready to make up the mind for yourself. And as we just stated, go register, vote early, take somebody with you to vote early. Make sure you take somebody to the polls on voting day. So we are down to crunch time. We got about 5 Sundays left between now and Election Day. And so this will be a drum that will be beaten every time we talk about voting and making sure your papers are in order so that your voice can be counted and not discounted.
Well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank all the listeners for tuning in. And, of course, a special thanks to my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent, Jima Hill Cook. Now, don't forget to follow her on Twitter, and that's at AskJima, AskJema. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade TalkRadio.blogspot.com. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer. Take us away, Joyce.